Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The University of Tulsa's new College of Health Sciences unofficially got underway with the start of the new school year. The new college will be officially dedicated at the end of this month, charged with making a dent in Oklahoma and the Tulsa area's shortage of healthcare professionals, as well as playing a role in reducing healthcare disparities in both outcomes and services across the city and from area to area around the region. Dr. Gerard Clancy is the Vice President and Dean of the College of Health Sciences, who stepped down as President of OU Tulsa to take on this initiative, which also includes a key partnership with OU's School of Community Medicine. He joins us to speak about the new college's role in adding healthcare initiatives for the community and training the next generation of healthcare professionals. Dr. Clancy, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be here, Rich.
This month is going to culminate a lot of work over the last couple of years. And of course, a big move by you a year or so ago to the University of Tulsa to create this new College of Health Sciences. What is the need for this new college here in Tulsa, given that we have OU Tulsa and their medical program?
Well, the state of Oklahoma and really the middle part of America is incredibly short on practitioners, health practitioners, and it's the entire spectrum. It is nursing. It is folks focused on wellness and public health. It is physicians. It's physician assistants. It's nurse practitioners. It's the whole spectrum. And so TU jumping into a much stronger initiative around health workforce is really important for the entire area.
Give us a sense of that shortage.
Oklahoma ranks as the most challenged state as far as providing primary care to its patients in the future. 41% of Oklahoma physicians are 55 and older. We have 10,000 Americans retiring every day. As people become older, they need more health services.
We all find as we age, we end up going to the doctor more.
It almost triples. It almost triples the amount of visits that even just health maintenance requires for someone over 65. So we're at a time when the demand for health care is going up dramatically. And those same people that are retiring are also physicians. And so we've got to really play catch up.
Now, you mentioned the average age of physicians. Is it a matter of graduates in our area going out of state, or has Oklahoma always been a net importer of physicians?
Well, we've always been behind in physicians. We've never, ever really caught
so,
up.
So most of the time, our physicians, they are either trained here or they come into here. They don't know so much as trained here and leave here.
No, we have one of the best retention rates in the country. I think Oklahoma is ranked 10th in the country as far as physicians that we train here stay here. And frankly, it's relatively easy to recruit back to Oklahoma from the East and West Coast as long as we get people here. If we can show them Tulsa, actually Tulsa becomes a great place to
The standard of living is lower, so you know if the fees are relatively the same, then their dollar goes further.
Very much so. Very much so. We find that particularly with those that we recruit from the East and West Coast, they're looking for a better place to raise their family. The schools are good, and the transportation times to work are good, and the value for your home is much better here.
Well, give us a sense of what the College of Health Sciences, it's not going to have a traditional MD degree. That goes at OU Tulsa, and it's a partnership with the University of Tulsa, but what will this College of Health Sciences provide?
Yes. The partnership with the University of Oklahoma is alive and strong, and the School of Community Medicine opened this month, and actually yesterday I taught three lectures to the medical students in the School of Community Medicine. So we have University of Tulsa faculty working very closely with University of Oklahoma faculty on the School of Community Medicine. On the physician assistant side, we've been doing that since 2008. That's going well. What will come aboard new is first an expansion of our nursing program. We have a bachelor's of nursing program here. It's very well regarded. Our students do very well as far as understanding quality improvement and understanding really the intricacies of nursing. And that program will expand. We'll be adding a doctor of nurse practitioner program in three tracks, one in primary care, one in critical care, and one in nurse anesthesia. The third area that we're expanding is that our athletic training program will expand to a master's program. That's a national effort accreditation-wise, and we expect to see athletic trainers involved much more beyond the sports field. They'll be working in corporate settings. Navy SEALs has recently hired athletic trainers. American Airlines hires athletic trainers.
Well, I think also the need in education, higher education, secondary education is going to grow for that, but just because of football injuries, the liability issues that are starting to crop up regarding football head injuries.
They really are. If we're going to continue to play contact sports, including football, including soccer, including basketball, attention to concussions has to really change, and that's a great role for our athletic trainers. And then the last program, which will take us probably another year to be fully developed, is a new one, one of the first in the country. It's a Master's of Health Delivery and Cultural Sciences. And that is meant to be a program for the mid-level professional who really wants to be a leader in the next generation of healthcare delivery that we're going to have in America.
So will these jobs work in hospitals, or would they be more of researchers looking at trends that sort of inform hospitals and medical sort of decision-making bodies, or
so
what?
What we're looking for is physicians, administrators, lawyers, governmental leaders, nonprofit leaders, anybody that touches health. And how can a better understanding of how our health system is moving in a more focused direction around the health of an entire population, how would additional training? And that includes informatics. That includes a much better understanding of demographics and hotspotting, a much better understanding of how to use informatics, and a much better understanding of how payment for healthcare is going to change and how paying attention to the broader aspects of health, the social determinants of health, needs to come into the mix, and how these individuals can actually make that happen.
Let me ask you, just in your experience, how well-versed are a lot of those people you're designing your program for? How well-versed are they in those larger trends now? I would think in the political realm, there's probably a pretty big disconnect.
Yeah.
But what about among administrators, and I would assume within public health and things like that, there's a good understanding of this.
There is, and public health is certainly a partner in this program. What we've noticed is there's a lot of individuals very interested in this topic. They see where healthcare is going, but they don't have the tools. They don't have the knowledge. We've done an extensive survey of middle part of America, and really there's no program like this offered in middle America. We've had several Tulsans go to Dartmouth for their master's in healthcare delivery sciences. We have one of the John Schumann's wife is doing the Columbia program in New York City. We've had other of our faculty do programs at University of Southern California. So the East and West Coast is starting to deliver these programs as far as training that mid-level professional. But there's nothing in the middle part of the country. What will distinguish us apart from those programs is a greater attention to the cultural aspects of health as well. How does sociology play? How does neighborhood play into it? How does poverty play into it? How do mental health issues and addiction issues? And we think we have expertise here. And the program that we could deliver in Tulsa could be a national model. And that great statistic that we have of improving health in North Tulsa shows that we are a city working together can make strides in very complex areas.
Now, this is a big area which Tulsa has been sort of a leader in, and really one of the first cities to sort of make a dent in health disparity outcomes, mortality rates within a given area. And as one might expect, people in high-level residential areas, high socioeconomic areas live longer. People in very poverty-stricken areas live shorter. It sort of goes into stereotypes too, and then you have to dispel some of those stereotypes. But there's a whole range of issues that go into this. Are cities really starting to pay attention to this?
They are, very much so. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has really taken the lead on this and is continuing to study new city after new city. What we're most proud of is we were one of the very first. In 2005 is when Mike LaPola from the College of Public Health at the University of Oklahoma showed me these graphs. And the first was that Oklahoma's health had improved the least of any state in the past 25 years. And I said, can you give me even more granularity to that? And he brought me back a zip code analysis of Tulsa County. And that's where it showed zip code 74106 and 74126 of central north Tulsa had a life expectancy difference compared to 74137 and 74114 in Midtown and in South Tulsa of 14 years. And we were the first city to really acknowledge that. And what I'm most proud about Tulsa is, first, that we were very honest about it. We didn't push it to the side as, oh, that's an interesting fact, and not do anything about it. And the second thing we did is took action and put together a plan. And that plan was called the Lewin Study. Since then, other cities, with the help of Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, have found similar disparities.
In fact, sometimes even larger disparities. Like I think you were showing me a graph once about New Orleans where it's 20?
New Orleans is 25 years difference across about 3 miles.
Wow.
It's really dramatic. Washington, D.C. is 9 years. Kansas City, the Twin Cities are both around 14 to 15 years as well. But in highlighting Tulsa, one of the things we're going to be able to say is, yes, people are recognizing health disparities and hot spots in particular urban areas, but Tulsa's been able to make a difference.
Getting back to that state statistic of Oklahoma's overall health improving the least, was it a matter of these areas where there are lots of problems dragging down the whole state, or was the whole state as a whole not really improving that much, or were you seeing pockets where you would expect to see this improvement because of all the healthcare technology we have? What exactly?
I think it brings up a great point. Not everyone in Oklahoma is of poor health. We have
right.
people that are very healthy. Not everyone in Tulsa is of poor health. Not everyone in North Tulsa is of poor health. What we have is areas where we have some very healthy people, but an extraordinary number of people that are very unhealthy. And those are societal issues. Those are cultural issues. Those are health system issues. Those are access to healthcare issues. Those are health coverage issues for insurance. It's a lot of things that add up to that. But you have these concentrated spots.
They're really like hot spots. And, you know, you're seeing all sorts of informatics. You're seeing this in all sorts of areas where you look at, say, crime statistics.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there are hot spots. And I assume what you're doing with healthcare is concentrating more effort on these hot spots to cool them off. And you can use this in a whole range of issues beyond health, too. I think that's the important thing about informatics.
Yes. So the G7 countries, way back in the early 90s, started thinking about a different version of policing and how to take down violent crime. And the popular term for this is CompStat, community policing paired with statistical analysis. And what you had is that knowledge of that officer on the street with a beat, at the same time, all the statistics. And when you put those two together, the anecdotal story, the narrative that the police officer can tell, combined with these data points, you can have a much better understanding of what's happening in what part of town. And what the G7 countries did as far as their major crime initiatives is started applying resources to those hotspots. And you saw a dramatic drop in robbery and theft and murder and assault.
You can do the same thing with healthcare.
You can do the same thing with healthcare.
So what have we done so far?
So Oakland has done this. Camden has done this. What we did is with 74106 and 74126 as a city, we put healthcare services where there was not. Morton received Vision 2025 money, a much better, broader, able to expand initiative with Morton Comprehensive Health. We put the Tisdale Clinic in 74126, straight north of Morton, and that provided specialty care services that weren't there. And then the health department put together their North Tulsa Comprehensive Regional Health Center that is focused on primary care and wellness. So three big initiatives. We added 29 doctors to North Tulsa with that, which was a great improvement. We had 4% of the physicians north of Interstate 244, whereas 40% of the population was there for our region. It really dramatic, really dramatic. So we had hot spots of health services where all the health services were, and cool spots where there was nothing.
Right. And the other thing was you also have, with those new services, you still have a geographic area you're having to serve. In the case of Morton, I know they created their own transit system to get people there because our own city transit system is not equipped and
couldn't do it. We, I continue to see patients at Tisdale Clinic, and the number one reason why people miss appointments with me is not because they forget, not because they don't want to come. It's transportation, and they will call me and say, "I'm still essentially 2 hours away on the bus. I can't get there today, Dr. Clancy." And what we did at the Tisdale Clinic is created a much more flexible clinic that we work people in when they miss an appointment, particularly for transportation issues. Mm-hmm. But you made the point, you know, you can use this in other areas. We can use this for food security. We can use it for economic development. We certainly can use it for education. And the list goes on and on as far as areas that we are struggling with. Rather than a one-size-fits-all, let's tailor programs to the needs of a neighborhood or a region of our broader region.
Yeah. Now, as we started breaking into this disparity, I think, what is it now, 11 or closer to 10?
We've gone from 14 years to really rounding up to 11. So a three-year difference, a three-year improvement, it covers about 30,000 people. And so that three-year difference, when you multiply that by 30,000, adds 90,000 years of life. And it's just a fabulous, wonderful statistic to be able to say what Tulsa's been able to accomplish.
And you think of the productivity of the city. I mean, if you're living 3 years longer, you know, generally, at least you're getting several years more productivity of being able to be a productive citizen. It helps the city in that way. There's no off side to this. Now, how do you break into that disparity more? What are the next steps? You're doing a better job of delivering health services there. Now you're getting into the difficult questions of changing behaviors, changing societal things.
The past 10 years was driven in part by a combined city planning effort called the Lewin Study. And it put together 10 initiatives to do, including adding health services to North Tulsa, stabilizing the Federal Qualified Health Center programs, which was Community Health Connections, Morton, and Indian Health. Adding some specific programs, we added a program called the Heart Intervention Program, which specifically targeted people at highest risk for heart attack and stroke, and it was phenomenally successful. But most of it was access to healthcare type of initiatives. I think this next level is going to be harder, and we need to do a community-wide planning effort, but it's going to have to get toward health literacy. Do people understand how to be healthy? It really's got to get into the interface of mental health, addictions, and traditional mainstream healthcare, and how do we work on those? Addictions and mental health behind the scenes have a dramatic influence on someone's physical health.
We just heard yesterday on the program talking about integrated health care and how that might work, where you have mental health professionals working alongside primary care physicians.
Absolutely.
Is this the next step, you think?
Well, right now we have a country that is at war on drugs. And when you talk to many experts, they are saying, you know, we've got a lot of focus on the supply of drugs, but have we really focused enough on trying to limit the demand on drugs? Can we treat the illnesses that people have, such as chronic pain or mental illness, that they're self-medicating with illicit drugs? That's a harder thing to do. And that's the next phase of planning. And so I think you'll see over the next 6 months or so another Lewin-type citywide initiative planning for what are the next big things we need to do. And it will incorporate some of the things that the University of Tulsa is quite strong at. Sociology, anthropology, informatics will be coming into the mix to a much greater extent.
My guest today is Dr. Gerald Clancy, Vice President and Dean of the College of Health Sciences at the University of Tulsa, which officially gets started later this month, although it's already at work. You welcome first students in. And there are big plans for this College of Health Sciences. One of the things you're going to do is for incoming freshmen that meet these thresholds, you're going to offer conditional medical school acceptance as an incoming freshman coming into this college.
We do. We just about finished that agreement with the University of Oklahoma that those superstar high school graduates coming to the University of Tulsa will have the opportunity to do what we call a provisional acceptance to medical school.
And that means as long as you keep the grades at the medical school acceptance levels, you achieve the way you would expect a applicant to medical school would achieve, right?
Absolutely. And we'll work with them. Actually, those students that are entered into that program, we call it Early Careers in Community Medicine. We'll want them to take a minor in one of several areas that we think really contributes to this field of community medicine, and that'll be medical informatics. That'll be biomedical engineering, that'll be sociology, that'll be anthropology. So a minor in those areas that we think an entering medical student would have just an additional boost in understanding how to improve the health of the community from that additional training. Alongside that, we'll have the Warren Foundation and St. Francis Hospital have contributed $10 million to a scholarship fund. And so we'll be able to support those students also with a nice scholarship fund. So we think we can recruit some superstar folks.
Yeah. Now, the other part of the educational effort is community, which is a big part of what you're doing at the Health Sciences. And I think you have a whole week of events at the end of this month called Health Week.
This is our first and hopefully our first annual Health Week at the University of Tulsa. It will start September 28th. Part of this year is just highlighting that we're kicking off the College of Health Sciences. But it's also showing to the community, showing to the region, the contributions that the University of Tulsa can have to these really complex problems. On September 28th, out at the Helmreich Center for American Research.
It's next to Gilcrease.
Next to Gilcrease, which I think is very appropriate. We're going to talk about America's health. And we're going to use some of those geomaps. And I have a set of maps that shows that Appalachia, the South, Oklahoma, and Texas really are dramatically different than the rest of the country in virtually every health measure that you could measure, as well as high school graduation rates. And I'm asking Kristen Ortel from the Department of History, Travis Lowe from the Department of Sociology, Michael Stromberg from Department of Anthropology and Matt Lamkin from the College of Law. From your discipline, explain this health continental divide that we have in the United States, and how can you, in your disciplines that are not in mainstream medicine, how can you help influence us and guide us on what to do next? So it highlights how TU can contribute to some of these really complicated problems. On Wednesday the 30th, we will have the formal opening of the College of Health Sciences, and we'll have a very exciting naming opportunity then and a very exciting opening of a facility that we'll be taking. On Thursday of that week, so that would be October 1st, because that new facility is downtown, we're going to have a great race, and it's going to be a race between one of the TU shuttles, the Goldie Mobile with Goldie, and myself on a bike. And who can get from the main campus down to this downtown campus in the shortest amount of time? And we'll also that week be announcing and doing a grand opening of our True Blue Neighbors Mental Health Clinic.
Now, talk about that a little bit. Where is this going to be located, and what population do you expect to serve?
This is just west of the TU campus on Lewis.
In the Kendall-Whittier area.
In Kendall-Whittier area. And this is our clinical psychology program. They saw a need in the community and an opportunity for our graduate students to take a leadership role. That clinic has been open since July, but is really ramping up in its ability. It is teamed with the Bedlam Clinic and funded by the Morning Crest Foundation, and it's doing phenomenal work as far as mental health needs of the Kendall-Whittier neighborhood, and now beyond. They're starting to take referrals from beyond, and it's been a great experience for learning for our grad students as well.
And what about the health for the community? I mean, is the community taking to this? How do the referrals work? Is it mainly through police contact, or is it through the school contact?
It is really, you know, the Kendall-Whittier neighborhood has a neighborhood organization. TU has a strong bond with them through True Blue Neighbors. We have a very strong relationship with the Kendall-Whittier school. And so the focus initially has been the school and the families of the school.
Of course, you have EduCare there too, as well.
EduCare there. And then a strong connection with Community Health Connections, which is the federally qualified health center just across the street. But as is typical in healthcare, word of mouth goes really fast too. And when people hear of something of high quality, the word spreads pretty quickly. And then with the relationship with OU, we've already teamed with them as far as referrals from the Bedlam Clinic, which offers mental health and specialty care, but not much on mental health services. There's a partnership there as well.
Is this filling a critical need? You know, because mental health care is some of the most expensive, that this is one reason why a lot of times we end up, you know, the confinement routine for somebody who needs close confinement ends up being jail as opposed to any sort of facility. I would think that this is touching a real need in certain populations because of the expense of
It's expense. It is, unfortunately, supply issue as well. Only about 2 or 3% of a medical school class goes into psychiatry. But if you compare that to about 10% of our population suffering from a severe mental illness at any time, even a snapshot in time. So we have a population demand of 10%, but a supply of physicians at that 2 to 3%, we'll never catch up. So that's an issue. And we still deal with stigma of mental illness, that somehow mental illness is a character flaw or a weakness rather than a biologic illness. One of the next phases of planning we will do as far as changing the culture of health in Tulsa will be around our Laureate Institute of Brain Research that is sponsored by the Warren Foundation, but we have a number of TU faculty that work with them. And that will be really pushing out the knowledge around the science of the mental illnesses, that these are brain illnesses, nothing to be embarrassed about, medical treatments available, and trying to break down that stigma as well. So you'll see that in the next 10 years, a big push for that as well.
And I have to ask you about one other thing, which is will happen in the officially in the beginning of October, but this is a new, I guess it's a fellowship program. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this summer we received certification and approval to be the 12th chapter for the Albert Schweitzer Fellowship Program, which is a national training program for graduate students that do anything related to health. Started at Harvard. The home office is still Harvard-based. It's a very prestigious.
When we think of Schweitzer, we think of you're going to underserved populations, be it Africa or, you know, East Tulsa for that matter.
Well, and Albert Schweitzer's life really included this link back from Africa to the United States and to the major medical schools, and, you know, can what America has as far as great health help countries that are struggling? And it was really one of the big starts of global health initiatives. And Harvard has kept that relationship forever. Interestingly, Albert Schweitzer himself, when he was doing his work in Africa, teamed with a Tulsa family, which is the Gussman family. Mm. And Lawrence Gussman was with Albert Schweitzer frequently in Africa and helped build the Albert Schweitzer hospitals and the Albert Schweitzer program. So, and the Gussman family has been so wonderful to Tulsa. It's the Adelson family and the mm-hmm. Heyman family now. Yeah. And so we've got that natural bond. And it was interesting when I walked into the Albert Schweitzer offices, they had up on the screen a big slide to introduce the training for the year. And there's a picture of Lawrence Gussman with Albert Schweitzer as the opening slide for this introduction to the Albert Schweitzer program.
So so what difference will this make? I mean, do they offer training opportunities? They offer...
We get a twofer out of this one in that probably around 10 students a year will be fellows in this program. They receive training at both the local and national level around how to better serve underserved populations as a leader in health initiatives. So they get that training, and so hopefully we've got 30 to 40 years of them now doing good work. Alongside that training, they actually have to do projects, and so they will be doing projects as they are getting trained that do good as well. And we expect it to be partnered with Kendall Whittier, with True Blue Neighbors, with Educare, the nonprofits in town. I'm very excited about our new campus downtown because we'll be very close to United Way. We'll be very close to Community Service Council, very close to Mental Health Association, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. What that allows is some of those natural partnerships. What's special about this fellowship is it's beyond TU as well. It is OU and OSU fully participating as well. So it already starts building that normal alliance collaborations that you should have between different major organizations in the city as well.
And I think the cool thing about this is, you know, we talk about this health delivery disparity in Oklahoma. With a program like this, if you're training 10 fellows a year, and hopefully at least 8 or 9 of them stick around here, all of a sudden you're going to start making some dents in some of these disparities within the city or within the area too, because we haven't even talked about the urban versus rural issues, right, which right. is also a big situation
very
as well.
Very much so. The Albert Schweitzer Fellowship, I actually went and got trained this summer because we hadn't hired up yet and somebody needed to go through the training. And so I went to Boston. And so I feel like I'm one of the workers now. But they consider themselves, after you've graduated from the program, after your year, you are now a fellow for life. And they bring back the fellows on an annual basis, and they do continuing education for them and keep them inspired. And if you look at the list of who are Albert Schweitzer fellows and who are national leaders in health improvement, they go together. And so we'll have our own cadre of Albert Schweitzer fellows right here in Tulsa. It'll be a great thing. And we're right there with some of the major medical schools. Hopkins has this, Harvard has this, Emory has this. We're right there with the most prestigious.
Well, we wish you great success with this new venture, which kicks off at the end of the month and is already underway, but officially kicks off at the end of the month. Dr. Clancy, thanks very much for joining us.
You bet, Rich. Happy to do it.
Dr. Jerry Clancy is the Vice President and Dean of the College of Health Sciences at the University of Tulsa. They'll be formally announcing the opening of the College of Health Sciences during their Health Week celebration, which gets underway September 28th with a symposium at 6:30 at the Helmrich Center for American Research next to Gilcrease Museum. For more information about the College of Health Sciences, visit utulsa.edu. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.